The World Tomorrow. Ambassador College presents Garner Ted Armstrong, bringing you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
And greetings, friends around the world. It's no wonder that Europeans are beginning to call the United States the sick man of the world, because we're mentally sick, physically sick, and morally sick. And in the United States today, we are utterly without what you could call natural affection. Would you believe that today there is a tourist bus that takes people on a sightseeing trip from the Loop in Chicago to the site of the murder of the 8 young student nurses? Hurry, hurry, step right up and see the spot where 8 young student nurses were butchered, goes the spiel, apparently. And believe it or not, there are now tourists to the site of that slaying. I won't give you the address, that's done too often. A sightseeing firm in the Loop in Chicago has detoured some of its buses to the site of the murders, of which Mr. Richard Speck has now been apparently held guilty. It reminds you of a Roman circus, doesn't it? And speaking of the circus air, said one writer in a Chicago neighborhood newspaper, remember the day on the murders on July 14th? Soon after the murders had been committed, one of the most absolutely blood-curdling atrocities in all time, in my recollection, a good humor truck pulled up to accommodate all the residents who had gathered around to see the site where the tragedy occurred. We got a letter in our World Tomorrow offices not long ago from a neighbor who had lived across the street from the home where Whitman lived, who had killed his wife and I believe his mother and about 14 others from the top of the Texas University Tower in Austin. And those people actually had to move from their home because they couldn't stand the continuous number of sightseers who were driving by outside and peering into the windows to get a look at the place where the murderer had lived. What a fantastic, free-swinging, all-permissive society we have today. Just like a giant circus reminding you of ancient Rome. Well, believe it or not, as shocking as it may sound to you, these days were predicted and prophesied in, of all places, the Bible. That's right. Our national way of life, our obsession with violence and crime, our mounting divorce, the national sickness and the crime of the peoples that are supposed to be the biggest nation, the Christian nation and the free nation on this earth, to lead the rest of the world into a place of freedom and safety. We try to bear on our broad shoulders all the problems of the rest of the world, and we don't do a very good job of it. Instead, they're calling us the sick man of the world today. And as Mr. Hubert Humphrey said recently, and I quoted in a recent program, when he had had to depart from the notes of his speech in talking to a collection of Jewish women, in talking about what other people in other countries think of the United States, twice tears came to his eyes when he said that all they hear about around the world is the evil of the United States, the crime of the United States, the divorce, the immorality, all of the sit-ins and the draft card burnings and the protest songs and the sick kid and the dope addicts and those on trips on LSD. And he decried that because he was sincerely hoping that people around the world could hear something else about the United States. Well, this program is heard around the world, and I can tell you something else about the United States, but the trouble with it is you need to get the whole picture in proper perspective. Sure, there are good, quote-unquote, people in the United States, just as there are in China. Many of you have been under the pressure, I suppose, to practically hate the Chinese people just because millions of them have been bamboozled and hoodwinked by one of the biggest lies in all the history of mankind and are under absolute slavery to communism. Sure, there are supposedly good people in the United States, but our society is lacking something very deeply. It's lacking what perhaps sociologists or psychologists might call natural affection, any capacity for entering into the feelings of others. No one cares for anybody today but himself, and that was predicted in the pages of Bible prophecy. Now, you can prove the Bible is up to date today. You can prove the Bible is true. You can prove that there is a God and you can believe in what he says. I've been in a series of programs I've called Seven Proofs God Exists, and I've been doing exactly that. But first to this prophecy that foretold in graphic terms the kind of an age and a day in which you would be living today. In 2 Timothy, the 3rd chapter, in the 1st verse, the Apostle Paul was writing to the young evangelist Timothy, and he foretold a very cross-section of our American, British, Australian, South African way of life. He said, this know also that in the last days perilous times shall come, for men shall be lovers of their own selves. Now, let's just analyze it little by little as we go through. Lovers of their own selves. What was that old song years ago about how I'm wild about myself, I'm crazy about myself, I put my arms about myself and give myself a hug? That was back in the roaring 20s, I guess, but human nature hasn't changed all that much from that time to this. I'm speaking to you today from a small town in East Texas. And you would think of all the friendly places on the face of the earth where you could go, where people even wave at you as you pass in your automobile, and where you get a friendly howdy and a nod from people on the street you'd never met before, that surely you would find a lack of violence, a lack of moral sickness, a lack of the mental disease that grips people with this almost ballooning selfishness that makes them a beast instead of a human. Not so. I know one very gentle man who is a proprietor of a local business, fellow who labored many, many years in a hardware business, and I've had the pleasure of going fishing with him a few times. He went into the men's clothing business in a small town in East Texas, a very sleepy, pleasant little town with a lake nearby where people like to fish. And it wasn't very long. He'd just gotten clear up to his ears in debt for the first big inventory that he laid into that store to sort of get the business going when he'd been laboring all of these years, he and his wife together, and they were pretty proud of that new store they'd gotten all fixed up, and lo and behold, he came to work one morning and found it stripped almost to the walls. And he hadn't even been able to afford the insurance policy because it was so high. And here in a tiny little town of less than 7,000 population, he'd been burglarized apparently by a gang of thieves that had outlets in some of the used clothing stores in Dallas, Texas. You know what's amazing? It wasn't long after that I heard, after I got back to East Texas recently, that the poor man had been robbed again. And of all things, one of our Ambassador College employees had been talking to the manager of a food store only about 20 minutes before he closed up shop and got in his pickup and then was shot to death right in his own parking lot in the same sleepy little town. Houston, Texas has more murders annually than all of Great Britain put together. We live in a nation we like to say, oh yes, there are good people. We wish we could tell the rest of the world about the good American, but we can't because we are having an increasing difficulty in finding many. These prophecies are true, and they do mean us. The Bible said men shall be lovers of their own selves, and all of these, quote, good, end quote, people are. You don't see very many people pioneering in the true pioneering field today against human nature. Building human character, coming to do what you ought to do instead of what you want to do. Resisting the downward pull of human flesh. And building righteous and holy and perfect character instead. You don't see very many people willing to stand for the mores, the principles, and the laws that they have proved true. Rather, you see a dissolution of principle and a watering down of morals. You see a drifting into decadence. Morally, intellectually, physically, in every way in our modern society today. That, too, was predicted. And the punishments that are going to come upon us from a foreign country are also predicted. And while we wallow in our own slop trough, oblivious to what's happening in the rest of the world, a Frankenstein monster that has been created with our own tax dollars is beginning to rear its fetid head. And we're going to be shocked as its architects and its builders when we see what does occur as a result of our own dreams of docile German divisions marching to the whims of the West as a bulwark against communism. And when we see what is beginning to right now rear its head in Germany, we're going to be appalled. But we won't be able to say nobody told me about it. I wasn't warned. I didn't know it was going to happen. But getting back to 2 Timothy to show you what the true cross-section of life is like, the way people are living it today. Men shall be lovers of their own selves, covetous. Now, covetousness is breaking one of the commandments of God. What's wrong with covetousness, people want to know. Well, what's wrong with covetousness is that it is idolatry, that it's putting a desire for some other person, for a status in society, for a financial benefit, for personal aggrandizement or something of that nature in the place of God. Like as not, it's just putting material possessions in the place of God. And you can find covetous, lustful people flocking out of the churches to light a cigarette to satiate their insatiable desire for physical sensations and pleasures. Oh, I suppose we can say that's not covetousness. It isn't? Well, then what is it? What do you call it? By what name do you put it? It's a limited narcotic form. Now, I'm not going on a personal campaign against smoking. If you want to smoke, well, help yourself. Put them in your ears, both nostrils, and put a little bit of dip of snuff under your eyelids. Help yourself. Wallow in it. Put it in your bathtub. Eat it. I wouldn't even begin to try to stop you, because it's like one chic man might say, who sits back and lights his cigarette, "Look, I got to go some way, haven't I?" That sounds real good from the armchair comfort of the time when you're not sick. And when you're not gasping for breath because they've just cut out one lung, it sounds pretty good from that vantage point. Of course, later on, it might not sound so good. I wish I had an article that a friend of mine read one time in a short sermon that I heard from a man in Honolulu, Hawaii, I believe it was, who was about to die of lung cancer and knew it. And he wrote an article which really every cigarette smoker ought to read, what the government ought to do, although I can't tell the government what it ought to do, is to get that article that this man wrote and to fold it up in a little insert and to put it by force and rule of law on every pack of cigarettes and make somebody read it before they smoke one. Well, you might say that indulgence in tobacco is a mild form of evil, and I'd agree with you. It's a comparatively mild thing. It's just like somebody banging his head with a sledgehammer and then somebody asking him, "Why do you keep doing that?" And he says, it feels so good when I stop. That's the only way you can explain it. You have never smoked to satisfy other people, but it's a lust of your own craving, of your own desire. Now, the Bible said you'd be living in a time where people would be boasters, proud, blasphemers. Oh, we always have a curse around us, don't we, today? Noted people, people in television, increasingly in the motion pictures, on the so-called legitimate stage, and I'm tempted to say illegitimate. You hear continually foul, filthy, bad language. My wife was amazed recently. She'd watched one of these idiotic television commercials, and in about 30 short seconds, these two little kids, I think they'd use gosh, gee whiz, golly, and darn about four times apiece. It was just remarkable. We like to water it down so people use those terms and they feel that isn't cursing, not realizing that gee whiz and gosh and all those are just takeoffs on the name of God and of Jesus Christ, but they use it anyhow. Now, that's a milder form of blasphemy. It isn't just by your speech, but by your conduct that you can blaspheme the name of God. A wife can blaspheme the name of God when she's disobedient to her husband. A husband who creeps out to buy his girly book or goes out to the neighbor's wife is blaspheming the name of God. There are many, many forms of blasphemy aside from just cursing the air blue. It's amazing to me. It seems the closer you get to nature and the further away from humankind, the more you would tend to see true character, a true awareness of the Creator and of His creation, but it seems the reverse is true. The further I get out in the middle of the lake, if I get anywhere near another boat, it seems like I hear nothing but a lot of foul profanity and cursing. You never heard the like in your life. Or you get out in a nice breezy golf course somewhere and you think somebody must have moved the green all of a sudden because somebody misses a short putt, and he blames God for it, apparently. And so it is in our society. Oh, but we like to say we're good people. And we like to say, isn't it a shame that the rest of the world gets the idea that the United States is the sick man of the world today, that we're sick morally, mentally, and spiritually. We like to hold up our hands in holy horror at the thought that people would think ill of us. Why, we're good people, we like to think. But you're living in some kind of a dream world, if that's what you think. The Bible says you would be living in a time where people would be blasphemers, disobedient to parents. And as never before, that characterizes our day. Now, people love the product of obedience, of the right kind of child rearing. We've had waitresses come up to us, and so many hundreds have, who followed God's method of child rearing, and they've said, "Where on earth did you ever get those children to sit there that quietly in a restaurant? I've never seen a family like this before." And they admire it. But don't tell them how you accomplished it, or they'll hate you and everything you stand for. The very idea that you should spank a child for evil, the very idea that you should cause him to sob and to come to you and say, "I'm sorry," in real repentance because you physically punish him for something, why, that's hitting a child. That's lashing out because you're some kind of a monster with a deep psychosis or a fixation against your own father, and you're taking it out on your child, or all these nutty psychological ideas they get into. Well, you ought to write for our booklet on the plain truth about child rearing and get that cleared up once and for all. And so today, you see the youngsters that have absolutely no morals, no integrity, not even a clear-cut personal conviction about the difference between honesty and dishonesty. Absolutely untrue to themselves, their family, their church, their nation. Untrue to their flag. You know, the kids that are dying in Vietnam today, they aren't the ones that are the draft card burners and the idiot hippies who sit around with their long hair smelling posies on the yard and having love-ins. These are the kids who, at least, regardless as to their attitude in so doing, felt they still had a country to fight for. I don't either justify that or condemn it at the moment. That's an aside. I merely state that we're living in a time increasingly where you see any kind of flagrant violation of moray, principle, law, love of country, integrity of the home and the family, honesty, anything that stands or smacks of permanency and dignity is impugned and ridiculed and trampled underfoot. And time was when if you'd heard of flag burning down in Cuba, it would have made you so mad you'd have expected American Marines to arrive and to quell the disturbance. But today, flag burnings go on inside the United States on university campuses. These are students. It reminds me of the swine that the increasingly poisoned pen of Al Capone. I have to say that humorously because I really do appreciate some of his characterizations of the kind of sick life that I'm talking about on this program. Swine, these are students wildly indignant about nearly everything. Swine. Let's all be swine, the placards read, and so on, you know. And it pretty well depicts the type of people. Some of our own plain truth photographers and college photographers wandered around among some of the hippies. There was one girl in Los Angeles who was dying. She was chewing her tongue. She was dying. She died. They carried her away. She died. They watched her death throes. She was on a trip of an overdose of LSD. And they published some of those pictures in our own campus newspaper. And they watched the rest of them, and one kid looked at them with sort of dull, glazed eyes, and he says, "Man, I mean, if you can't feel it here, I mean, like..." And then he drifted off into nothingness, and they didn't even know what he was trying to say, and he didn't either. But this is the going thing today. And I'm not going to tell you about all the ruses and the things they use anymore, some of the chemical mixtures and the like, because all the widespread warnings to the contrary, all the knowledge about what it might do to you seems only to cause more teenagers to dive overboard into it and to take the stuff. When it's getting so anymore, you have to buy airplane glue and a prescription. Oh, we like to tell the world we're not really that way. It's a sad thing, said our vice president, that the rest of the world can't see the way the real Americans really are. Well, I'll tell you, there are increasingly too few of them today. I'll agree with him. It's a sad thing they can't see it. It's a sad thing that the whole world can't see it, and I'll tell you why they can't see it, because there's not enough of it there. And because good is not sensational, but evil is. And because people wouldn't go to a motion picture about a clean young man holding a girl for a walk through the park and proposing to establish a home and to rear children under the fear of God and country, you couldn't sell that kind of copy today. It's got to be perverted. It's got to be a triangle. He's got to be a teenage werewolf or somebody who thinks he's his own grandmother. It's got to be filled with butchery and slaughter and perverted evil sex, or you can't sell it. Now, maybe you think this is just an accident, but this is one of the most accurate prophecies in all the Bible. I say one of the most. They're all accurate. But I mean by that, this is in detailed accuracy about the way of life of people today. He said, disobedient to parents, and we're living in just such a time, as Isaiah said in Isaiah 3 and verse 12, as for my people, children are their oppressors, and women rule over them. And you ought to think about that, because if you knew the truth about the vote, and about the real civic-minded and civic and communal conscious people in our society, you would find that statement is absolutely accurate. Now, he said they would also be unthankful. And we are. Bunch of ingrates, unthankful. We don't give God thanks. The day of Thanksgiving, when we're supposed to give God thanks, is the day for murders and revelry, drownings, accidents. It's a day when people maim one another, shoot one another, and very few people pay much attention to really giving God thanks. The churches are empty and the golf courses are full. He said we would be living in a time where people would be increasingly unholy and without natural affection. But we've got a lot of the unnatural part around, haven't we? The unnatural type where it gets into perversion. You know, not everybody ignores a fellow citizen in distress. We hear about these cases. I've talked about them on The World Tomorrow time and time again. But not everybody ignores someone who slips and falls or is struck by an automobile. Nobody ignored Val Malarney, who is 41 years of age and who slipped on a banana peel in a subway recently in New York City. Matter of fact, it was only a matter of minutes when two men rushed up there. One of them stole his wristwatch and fled. The other one was trying to get his wallet out of his pocket when he was frightened away by another passerby. What that other passerby did, I can only guess. When help finally did arrive, he had to be hospitalized for treatment of injuries received in the fall. Never got his watch back. You don't want to fall in a crowd. The time was when you used to think, oh, I'm safe, I'm in a crowd. Oh, no, you're in terrible jeopardy. Your life is in danger. Don't slip and fall. They're liable, if you're a female, to, well, let's not go into it. Now, State Attorney General Thomas Lynch in California warned recently that the statewide shortage of peace officers is becoming critical there because a recent study by State Peace Officers Standards and Training Commission had reported that 900 positions were unfilled this year due to a lack of qualified applicants, and the reason for that was because of wholesale retirement and of people quitting their jobs and of new recruits not even wanting the job, and they're having a terrible difficulty in getting police officers to wear a badge and a gun anymore because of the terrible number of mounting attacks against police. In the United States in the year 1966, 1 out of 10 police officers was physically and violently attacked, and any number of them were killed. You talk about police brutality, well, you have to ask people in the police departments what they say about it. And you ask one man whose name is Detective J.P. Arnold, a member of the Atlanta Detective Bureau, what he thinks about it, and he'll maybe have a little bit of difficulty telling you. He would like to, but you see, his face is held together by wire. He's a Negro detective, incidentally, and he was assigned to the police department's Helping Hand Squad, where they tried to reconcile fathers and sons and tried to have the friendly, we're the good cop approach, the mild-mannered, polite approach to people to rehabilitate them. So he was out talking with a father about a juvenile delinquency problem and telling him that his son had been in some problems. He wanted to try to help him and to help understand the kid. And about the time the conversation ended, the father lashed out at Arnold and beat him up. And the first big fist that crashed into his face shattered his jaw so badly he couldn't yell for help. The man continued to beat him, and he thought he was going to beat him completely to death, and so in self-defense he had to pull out his pistol, and even then he only shot him in the leg to try to get the man off of him. Or you talk about brutality against the citizens by the police. Well, you ought to ask about the Atlanta officer who was choked by two suspects wearing handcuffs, or the one who was shot and had to crawl out of an alley yelling for help, or the one that was severely bitten when a woman suspect in a burglary sicked a dog on him, or the one who was severely bitten by a woman suspect herself. And you ask the other Atlanta policeman who in June wrote matter-of-factly on a report form this, quote, "While attempting to unload a prisoner at City Hall, I was struck across the throat with a knife. 6 stitches. Now, there's plenty of evidence about brutality against police, and there's a lot of screaming about police brutality. You see, you're a real brute when you try to enforce a governmentally decreed curfew, or when you try to enforce a law that all of your peers have voted in. That's the way people look at it today. Well, are these prophecies of 2 Timothy 3 coming to pass? Are we living in such an age? It says here we would be without natural affection, but there's plenty of the unnatural kind, the perverse kind. To show you what's happening, for instance, the Bell telephone system last year receives 375,000 complaints about obscene telephone calls. Now there are a lot of lurking creeps in society who delight in just picking up a number at random out of the telephone book, calling someone, and unleashing a lot of filthy words just for the sheer delight of doing so. And, of course, the Bell telephone system reported only those complaints they had received, 375,000 of them. Now, a Senate subcommittee had been told how the number was rising steadily in New York City, where reported indecent calls increased by 30% in 1965 over 1964. The phone company finally had to establish an annoyance call bureau to handle them. And now they're trying to devise new electronic methods tracing equipment to detect the callers, even from public phones. We live in a jungle-like society, and we like to hold up our hands and say, no, it's not true. The world is getting a false picture. We're not really this way. Well, if we're not really this way, then let's prove it. Why don't we begin to see it right out in the light of day? Why don't we see more of the decency? Why don't we see more of the morality? And why do we sensationalize the immorality and the indecency, and then why do we conduct tourist trips so people can see where it happened? The Bible said you'd be living in a time of people who would be truth breakers, false accusers, incontinent, fierce, despisers of those that are good, traitors, heady, high-minded, lovers of pleasures more than lovers of God. Of course, people don't even believe God exists anymore, but you can prove that. We have the booklets for you on Does God Exist and the Proof of the Bible if you want to get them, and I've been on a series of programs on The World Tomorrow where I've done just exactly that. And every single number of the Plain Truth magazine has an article on the subject of evolution, and we go into it thoroughly, and we show the big yawning gaps in the theory of evolution, that it has not a single leg to stand on, that instead of there being a chain that is almost complete and missing one or two links, it's missing the whole chain. And these articles show you. We find that teenagers, high school and college students are using these articles for reports in their classes and getting straight A's. And we find that oftentimes the professor has no answer. They are educational and highly informative, and they're also going to inspire you when you see the truth. Now, also in the current number of the Plain Truth magazine is a very inspiring doctrinal article for those of you, by the many thousands, who have really worried about whether or not it's possible for a Christian professing person to commit a sin and still be a Christian. Many people become what I suppose churchmen call backsliders, and they think, well, maybe it's too late, they've just had it, they started out, they were maybe baptized or sprinkled or whatever their method was, and they wanted to change their life way back when they were a young, impressionable kid, but they've since done this or that or the other thing, and they think, well, maybe I've had it. And if they do sort of suspicion that there is a God, and they do sort of suspicion there is coming a judgment, they think that it's too late for them, and they've committed the unpardonable sin. Well, this article, What Do You Mean, the Unpardonable Sin, shows you from the Bible. This is not human reason, but question after question settled in the light of Bible Scripture on what is the unpardonable sin, and only when you understand what it is will you come to know whether or not you or anybody else has committed it. So this article, What Do You Mean, the Unpardonable Sin, is one that's going to encourage many thousands of people who may think they have when they haven't. Write for it in the current number of the Plain Truth magazine. It's free of charge. Also another article from behind the scenes with Wilson in Bonn, how nearly 3,000 years ago, British Prime Minister Wilson's visit to Germany was foretold in Bible prophecy. And read how your very future is involved in Britain's hopeless bid for help from her former enemy, and ours as well, as I've said in this program repeatedly. Also an article on what colleges and universities do not tell you. Who really pays for higher education and who should pay for it? Tuitions don't. You'll be amazed to see these comparisons in the Plain Truth magazine. No cost whatsoever if you write to Herbert W. Armstrong, Box 111, Pasadena, California. That's Herbert W. Armstrong, Post Office Box 111, Pasadena, California. Be sure to tell us the call letters of your station. Until next time, this is Garner Ted Armstrong saying goodbye, friends.
You have heard The World Tomorrow. Send your letters to Herbert W. Armstrong, Post Office Box 111, Pasadena, California.